And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy, going on around the world through worldwide Christian radio, WWCR, Nashville, Tennessee. Of course, we're stationed here in Austin, Texas. We like to say this is the Republic of Texas, but we are Americans too, of course. And we're glad to have a great guest with us today. I'll tell you, when I got his book, I saw the cover, and very, very fine cover, a thick book. Around 300 and some odd pages, 340 pages or so. And I said, oh, come on. This is the first book I've really seen on this subject. And I said, oh, I bet this is just one of those, Kool-Aid type books. Probably not very hard hitting. Surely somebody doesn't know the true story of the Bilderberg Group. And I took this book home with me. And I read it over a weekend, and I'll tell you, it is the number one book in the world. In fact, it's one of the only books in the world on this subject. It really is a pioneering study, powerfully written, a wonderful book, because I love, as you know, folks, I love to expose the elite. I love to expose those who think that they're better than you and me, and they deserve to rule the world and, you know, to Hades with a republic or with elections and all those things. So, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group. It's written by Daniel Estulin. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'll ask Daniel in just a moment because he's on the line with us from the country of Spain over in Europe. And this book, absolutely, I want you to, folks, to get out your pencil and paper. Now, many of you are listeners, very faithful listeners to Power of Prophecy, here on powerofprophecy.com or on WWCR shortwave radio. But those of you who aren't, you'll need to get a piece of paper and a pencil or pen because you're going to want to write down our toll free number during the halftime. I call it, to use a football analogy. We always have halftime on this 1 hour program and we offer usually a book or a tape. Sometimes I don't, but often we do. We only offer books or videos or CDs that I have personally reviewed and I know are outstanding information resources. You know, we could just offer best-selling books and all this nonsense that comes from the elite control media, the conspirators, as I call them, but we don't do that. We only offer you books. Some of these books you can't get anywhere else. They're just not available because we have the courage to tell you the truth. Well, Daniel Estulin does also have the courage to tell the truth. And Daniel, I want to welcome you to Power of Prophecy.
Good afternoon or good evening, good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I've heard a lot of things about your show, sir, and from a lot of different people across the United States. And again, it's an honor to be with you and to be able to talk about these people on your show.
Thank you, Daniel. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're originally Canadian, but now living in Spain?
No, I'm actually originally from the Soviet Union. My family, we were kicked out of the Soviet Union in 1980. My father was a famous scientist, but he was also a dissident. He sought freedom of speech, something that people in the United States just take for granted. And he was jailed for 3.5 years. He spent in prison. He was tortured. He suffered 2 clinical deaths. He recovered himself. And then in 1980, when the Soviet government got tired of torturing my dad, they kicked us out and we went to Canada. My family still lives there. My dad, thank God, is alive, and he's not very well, but he's alive. And I came to Spain in mid-1990s because, in all fairness, I feel much safer in Europe than in Canada and the United States because the long reach of the CIA in this particular case was really getting a little bit too close for comfort. They tried to kill me in 1996 when I got too close to the Bilderbergers, and when I also uncovered their plans for the North American Union by destroying Canada and merging Canada and the United States into one country. something we're seeing right now becoming a nightmare reality. So I'm Russian, I lived in Canada, and now I live in Spain.
Well, let me just say, I don't know, maybe later on we can do a whole program just on Russia. That would be a revelation to people. But I'm very thankful that there are many patriotic people in Russia who are beginning to understand the truth, and they're not doing exactly what the globalists want them to do, it appears now. And one of the first questions I wanted to ask you was why you wrote this, but what would compel you? Maybe just a little bit of the answer to that came when you told us what happened, what horrible thing happened to your father back during the Soviet communist days. Are there any other reasons that compelled you to write this terrific book?
You know, over the years, the Bilderbergers, they've tried to bribe me, kill me, have me arrested. And the last episode, a couple of years ago, they basically said, how much money do you want to keep your mouth shut? And my question to you and to all the listeners out there is, how many zeros does freedom cost? Because the only thing that money really buys is short-term, not even happiness, but things. But these are perishable goods. And when they basically perish, what are we left with? What are the future generations left with? Again, how much does freedom cost? And as so few people are doing what they should be doing, I felt compelled that I had to basically take a stand, stand up, decounted, and said, well, we are not going to let these people do this to us. And I basically revealed the truth. And I have unraveled what the man behind the curtain represented by the Bilderberger elite have basically been planning to do to us for such a long time.
Well, you absolutely pull no punches. I want people out there to know not only the North American Union is covered in this book. In other words, how they're regionalizing the world. But you have photographic evidence in here. You have you name the names. Let's put it that way. And you don't pull any punches, and I really appreciate your courage in doing this. Now, let's start off, and I'm going to let you do a lot of the talking, believe me, but a lot of folks out there still don't know what the Bilderberg Group is, what the Bilderbergers are. We've talked about it a number of times, but obviously nobody knows more than Daniel Estulin about the Bilderbergers. What are these people? Who are they?
Well, first of all, let me tell you what they're not or who they're not. Bilderberg is not a Jewish Masonic conspiracy, as so many people out there tend to believe based on very fragile logic we see on the Internet. Neither is it an Illuminati conspiracy. And finally, Bilderberg is not a monolith, meaning that no group of people, no matter how powerful they are, sit in a dark room holding hands, staring at a crystal ball, plotting the world's future. Now, as to what they are, I think you realize that in a world of international finance, there are those who steer the events and those who react to the events. While the latter are often better known, they're greater in numbers and seemingly more powerful, you realize that true power rests with the former. And at the center of this global financial system are the financial oligarchy today represented by the Bilderberger Group. And the idea behind each and every Bilderberger meeting is to create, as they call it themselves, the aristocracy of purpose between European and North American elites on the best way to manage the planet. In other words, the creation of a global network of giant cartels more powerful than any nation on the planet, destined to control the necessities of life of the rest of humanity. I think that's basically what Bilderberger and their ilk is.
Now, you reveal, of course, the fact that they have met since 1954, their first meeting in the Netherlands, and they meet annually. Is that right?
That's right. They meet once a year. The Bilderbergers were born in 1954. That was their first meeting. They met at the Bilderberg Hotel in Oosterbeek. That's why they're called the Bilderberger Group. Oosterbeek is a small town about 30 minutes out of Amsterdam, which is the capital of the Netherlands. The Bilderberg Hotel at the time was owned by the Dutch royal family. Of course, the key representative of the Dutch royal family was Prince Bernard, a Nazi, and his daughter, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, is one of the key members of the Bilderberger Club. These people meet once a year. Europe, North America, it's basically your NATO alliance, every 4 years or so they meet in the United States or Canada. The rest of the time they meet in Europe. They always pick a small location about 30, 40 minutes away from a major metropolitan. This way it's very easy to hide their misdeeds in a five-star hotel. It's a 3-4-day meeting. They start on a Thursday. They end on a Sunday. They have two working sessions every day except for Saturdays when they meet only in the morning. And the Bilderbergs, of course, you're looking at the most powerful men and a few women in the white world, presidents of every nation in Europe, the United States and Canada. The American president doesn't ever go because every minute of his time, as you well know, is accounted for. But he's always very well represented by his minions, such as Richard Holbrooke, Richard Pearl, Douglas Feith. Whoever they may be, they always report to the president. The Henry Kissingers, of course, are there. The David Rockefellers are there. Every president of the most important corporation in the world is there as well. Also, the commissioners from Europe are there. The president of the European Central Bank is there. The World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the Federal Reserve Board is there. All the European royalties are there. And they're joined at the table by the leading representatives of North American and European media, corporate media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Newsweeks, the Time magazines, the Wall Street Journals, etc., etc., which is one of the reasons people might not have ever have heard of the Bilderberger Group, because the leading representatives of the media form part of this giant systemic conspiracy designed to destroy the nation states of the world.
How many people are we talking about? You know, average meeting of these elitists, how many men would there be there? And women, of course.
You're looking at about 120, 130, 135 people maximum per year, out of which you're looking at 39 people who form the executive committee, divided into three groups of 13. Of course, these people, most of them are Satanists, so numerology is very important to them. Then you also have regular invitees who've been invited and who've been coming for years, if not generations, such as Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller of this world. And then, of course, the casual invitees who might be invited once or twice, and if they don't serve their purposes, they just discard it like an old shoe. These are, we're looking at about 40, 50 of them every year. Again, these people have a very good eye for future talent. They always pick a winner because, of course, they represent the left, the right, the center. Every political party is there, and, of course, every political candidate of choice and interest is always there, which is, again, as I explain in the book, not only is every president or past president of the United States is a member of the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral Commission of the Council of Foreign Relations, but also every candidate to the presidency as well for the opposition party, they are always members of the Bilderberger, the CFR, the Trilateral Commission. Not only that, most key congressmen and Senate members as well, members of these elites, which is why, again, we should ask ourselves, the secret government known as the Bilderberger Group, who do they work for? Because they certainly don't represent the people. They certainly don't represent us. They represent the interests of an oligarchy, of a tiny elite, represented by 120 people who, in our name, want to rule the world.
Now, you mentioned David Rockefeller, the Rockefellers, and, of course, Kissinger, who is basically a clone or a creation of the Rockefeller Empire.
I'd say a lackey, personally.
Yeah, true. Now, how about the Rothschilds? They have an interest in this, the Bilderberg Group, too, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, the Rothschilds are one of the key members as well. Of course, we know a lot about the Rothschilds because there's just so much literature out there on the Rothschilds. But there's another financial institution, a very, very powerful merchant bank, expert in mergers and acquisitions, very few people know about, but they're more powerful even than the Rothschilds. They're called the Lazard Bank, L-A-Z-A-R-D. And they're very well represented at the Bilderberger conferences, and their history goes back a couple of hundred years. And, for example, Vernon Jordan, that's Bill Clinton's dear friend, he's a member of Lazard, and now ex-president of the International Monetary Fund, the Spaniard Rodrigo Rato, he's just signed on as the number two man at Lazard as well. So again, the Rothschilds are very powerful and very important within the infrastructure of Bilderberg, but there are so many other banks and corporations, these oligarchical families we've never even heard of. And this is what I do in the book. I reveal their names, and as you say, I show the photographs. There's over 90 pages of photographs and documents in my book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, which again shows beyond any doubt who these people are and what they've been trying to do to us for such a long time.
Well, you know, documentation here in the United States shows very clearly that Lazar was one of the early, in fact, they were one of the shareholders of the Federal Reserve System. So even though they're a European banking dynasty, I believe you're absolutely right, because even at the 1913, at the creation of the Fed Reserve System in the United States, the Lazar Group was among the you know, the handful of banking groups that that had an interest. The question might be, some people might ask, if the Rothschilds, who appear to be not billionaires but trillionaires, have hidden their wealth behind such a huge combination, a trust arrangement, you might say, a consortium in which much of it is hidden. But that would take that would be another book, I suppose, Daniel.
Well, of course, the Rothschilds, again, you're absolutely right. I mean, what you just said about the Lazars is very, very true. But again, how many people out there in the United States, in Canada, in Europe, know even of Lazar's existence? I don't even mean to say about their history. And the Rothschilds have trillions of dollars, but there are other families who have hundreds of trillions of dollars, such as the, you know, the German bankers and industrialists, the Krupp family, K-R-U-P-P. Uh-huh. I have documents which show, Krupp's bank account, only one bank account in one jurisdiction in Switzerland has over $112 trillion. That's just one bank account. And again, with that money, they can eliminate, eradicate, destroy poverty in the entire world. Of course, that wouldn't be in their interest, because that would be helping human species. And these people's main objective is destroying us.
Now, evidently, I'm not saying that they have a controlling leadership in the Bilderberg Group, but the royalty of Europe evidently also are connected. And even the pictures you have in the documentation, you have a number of the royalty attend these meetings.
Exactly. Every royal family, every royal house in Europe forms part of the Bilderberg elite. And, of course, the leading representatives are the Queen of the Netherlands, Queen Beatrix, and, of course, Queen Elizabeth II of the United Kingdom. She is the leading and the most important and the most powerful woman in the world. She never goes. She never needs to go. But she is always well represented by people whose interests, of course, is represent the royal family of England.
Now, let's talk about two. There are two folks who I get a number of letters on Daniel over the years, and I don't agree necessarily with them, but it's always of interest to me. You know, there are a lot of people out there that like to name the Antichrist. And it's not a bad game to play, you know, why not evaluate some of these people? But there are folks who get fastened on to one name or another and just are convinced. Two names that seem to come up quite regularly, and this may put you in a little jeopardy being there in Spain, but two names that seem to come up also seem to have a connection with the Bilderbergers. One is King Juan Carlos of Spain. The other is Prince Charles. Now, I really do not believe that either one of these are the future Antichrist, but do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I do. As far as Juan Carlos of Spain is concerned, he's a non-entity. As a matter of fact, it's his wife, Queen Sophia of the Greek royal family, who is the most important member of this amongst the Spanish Bilderbergers, because it is she who is invited annually to their conferences. The king is never invited. Well, it only goes to show you how important she is and how unimportant he is. As far as Prince Charles, is concerned, of the United Kingdom, He belongs to so many secret societies that, you know, you just lose track of them all. Bilderberger, however, is not one of them. He has never attended a Bilderberg conference, although I do have people who have been following the British royal family for quite some time and who have been saying to me for a long time, they've been able to actually map out this, you know, terrifying underworld of the British royalty. And they said that Prince Charles is involved in some, you know, he's quite an evil character, involved in some satanistic rituals with some terrifying secret societies. I have their names of the secret societies. I would prefer not to reveal them over the airways because it might put my friends in jeopardy because, again, there are very few people out there know that these societies even exist.
I understand that. I understand your reluctance at this time. Of course, I mentioned Prince Charles because Prince Philip is a regular at these meetings. So maybe he's the representative, and he seems to be a pretty dastardly character too. You know, as head of the World Wildlife Fund, he's the one who suggested that most of the world's population be killed off or exterminated, whatever you want to call it, to make way for nature.
You know, this is a very, very interesting point. I mean, Alex Jones talks about it in Endgame. We coincide 100% on the Bilderberger plans. You know, I have a document, and Alex does as well. This is the Memorandum 200 written and signed by Kissinger with Nixon's signature on it as well. It was written in 1974, a couple of months before Nixon had to step down from the presidency. And they were talking about reducing up to 4 billion people by the year 2050, because again, according to them, there's just not enough food on the planet for all of us. Now, I know that they're not going to reduce themselves out of existence, so which only leaves by the process of elimination us, the rest of humanity. So again, going back to what I said at the very beginning, sir, how many zeros does one's life and freedom cost? Again, you have to fight this evil, lest we one day want to end up dead in the name of a very tiny oligarchy who wants to rule the rest of humanity in their name.
Now, evidently, former president of Mexico, Daniel Vicente Fox, made a big run through the media here in the United States. He was on Cable News Network and other outlets, Fox Network, you know, the usual culprits of the neocons here in America. But Vicente Fox was here, and amazingly, he actually admitted the existence of a plan for a North American Union. And when asked about a currency, a new currency for the North American Union, he said, yes, that is a plan for the long term. So he admitted that. What about the North American Union? You know, the European Communion, when it, the EEC, the community, when it began back with the Treaty of Rome, back in the 50s, those critics who said this is going to end up in a nation state of Europe, they were laughed at, scorned, ridiculed, made to look like idiots. But here we have it. Now we have the European Parliament. We have the Euro currency. Now we have this North American Union, and the president of Mexico, the current one, and the prime minister of Canada and Bush, a couple of months ago up in the Winnipeg, laughed it off and tried to make fun, you know, like they're a bunch of conspiracy freaks that would actually believe such a thing. Of course we don't have a plan like this, but we know they do. And the question is, what are the Bilderbergers doing about this? Are they in favor of a North American Union, the ending of sovereignty for the three individual nations?
Well, first of all, just, you know, I'd like to expand a little bit what you said about Vicente Fox. He has never been known as a very bright man, and when he actually, you know, what he said about the North American Union becoming a reality, it was a slip-up. I talked to people who actually worked for David Rockefeller, and Rockefeller was absolutely enraged at his comments. And if you watch the videotape again, he added at the very end, you know, in the future, he said, oh yeah, there's going to be a North American Union. There was a pause, and he said, in the future, long future. He tried to make up lost ground. Of course, again, everybody picked up on it, and the Rockefellers of this world were absolutely enraged because what he basically did is he showed that beyond the government, there's another level of control. I call them the man behind the curtain, and these men behind the curtain have been doing what they've been doing to us since the Bilderbergers came about in the 1950s. And as you said again, you know, initially we had nation states, countries with constitutions, flags, currencies, borders. Now we have one country called Europe, one constitution called the European Constitution, which, by the way, takes precedence over national constitutions in times of crisis. And you know, sir, how easy it is to orchestrate a crisis when you want to orchestrate one. You have a currency, one currency called the euro, and of course you don't have borders. You have one country. You have the same thing now in North America being put together. African Union has been going strong for the past 5 years. Now they're putting together the Asian Union, and all of these unions, that's a penultimate step towards the creation of a one-world government, new world order, one constitution, one religion, of course imposed by them at our expense, one currency, one money, one people, one everything, again, run by these people, and needless to say, they won't need 6 billion people on the planet. They only need a small fraction of it to do the menial, slave-like labor.
You know, there was a, I was reading about a study done recently. I think it was certainly bogus science, but it makes you wonder why they would put out such a study, speculating that sometime in the future, maybe 50 to 100 years from now, the majority of people would be sort of a goblin type race. You know, a bunch of, deformed, short, ugly, dark people, while the beautiful race, the pretty people, the rich, would be taller, more healthy, something like out of some Nazi eugenics class, but evidently it was some serious, put forth as a serious scientific thesis, and it makes you wonder if these things are coming out of some secret propaganda laboratory of the Bilderbergers, doesn't it?
Well, it might very well be, because the whole idea of destroying the nation states, of destroying humanity, of destroying countries, nations, people, histories, and going and creating what these people have been so hard at work creating is the idea of, again, what I said before, the destruction of nation states and taking us back to the Middle Ages, to the ages of the serfs and the slave owners, basically the Bilderbergers, whose ideas, again. Now, we can talk about, if you will allow me very, very briefly, I'd like to explain to the people where this whole thing comes from, because I think very few people understand what's behind, you know, the Bilderberger drive and before them the CFR drive. The whole thing actually goes back in time to the Council of Florence, which is what modern history
is
created. I'm talking...
Hold on just a minute, Daniel. This sounds very fascinating. I want to give you some time to really elaborate and come forth with this. So let's take a break right now, if we could. When we come back, let's start off with that Council of Florence and let's look at the beginnings, the foundations, of this group. Okay. So let's take a quick break. Friends, my guest today is Daniel Estulin. That's spelled Estulin. He is a Russian, as he's said. And I've got a couple questions for him on the other side about that. But he has written a tremendous book, and we're going to take a break right now, and I'm going to tell you about that book and how to get it. This is Tex Mars. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Tex Mars back again. The true story of the Bilderberg Group. That's the... absolutely terrific book. And you know, I don't say that about very many books. In fact, we offer, as Sandra knows over here at our production board, we offer very few books really at Power of Prophecy. Probably in a given year, probably only 5 or 6 books in a whole year that are new. And we're offering this book. Why? Because it's the first book ever to expose fully the Bilderberg group. And it does it in such a way. Daniel Estlin is a tremendous writer. You're going to hear about the Rockefeller conspiracy, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, how it all ties together with the huge banking and financial groups. You'll see how the royalty of Europe are involved in this, including the royal family of Queen Elizabeth, Prince Philip. You'll also see where the Bilderbergers meet and the kinds of things they discuss behind the scenes. I'll tell you, this is just an amazing book. It talks about the history of this group and its future goals. And you're going to see the names here. James Wolfensohn, chairman of Wolfensohn and Company. Paul Wolfowitz, you know, the neocon traitor at the Pentagon, who became president of the World Bank and is now back with the Bush administration again. All of these people are mentioned in this book. And, of course, there's the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, Henry Kissinger, all the usual suspects. But some of the biggest corporations in the world, from IBM to Siemens. Then there's the fellowships, so-called, and the think tanks. The Hudson Institute, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, the Rockefeller Foundation, the kinds of groups, I'm talking about the Hudson Group, the kind of groups that gave us the bogus, horrible war in Iraq that has caused so many thousands of American soldiers to lose their life. Hey, I'm a Texan. Rick Perry is mentioned here in this book. He is a member of the Bilderbergers, and no wonder he's promoting the Trans-American Corridor, the so-called NAFTA superhighway of the North American Union, up through the bowels of the state of Texas, all the way up to Minnesota, up into Canada. Rick Perry, I believe the man has been taking bribes for a number of years from the Bilderberg group, and he's a valued member of the group. Daniel Estlin has already talked about Her Majesty, Queen Sophia, Queen of Spain, who is a member. Peter Sutherland of Goldman Sachs. Now, there's another group for you. You know, our own Secretary of the Treasury, Paul Paulson, he, I'm sure, must be going there. He's a member, or was, of Goldman Sachs. So all of these, the big names of the media world. A few weeks ago, we talked about the propaganda organs of the New World Order and how they have been able to gobble up over the years cable news networks, CBS, ABC, NBC, Newsweek, Time, Life, the Washington Post. All of that is explained in this incredible book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group by Daniel Estlin. Now, let me tell you how to get this book. $29, that will be post-paid. All the shipping, handling, everything will be taken care of. $25 actually for the book, but $4 is for shipping and handling. A total of $29, okay, for the book. Over 300 pages, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group. All you have to do is write to us, send us a check, money order, or cash for $29 and ask for the Bilderberg book. See, you don't even have to remember the title. It is, of course, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group by Daniel Estulin, E-S-T-U-L-I-N. But all you have to do is say, hey, Tex, send me the Bilderberg book. And even if you spell that wrong, a lot of people spell it B-U-R-G on the end rather than B-E-R-G. Hey, we know what you're talking about. We've got some pretty smart folks around here, and they're nice, too. They want to help you out in our shipping department. You can phone us toll-free to order the book, 1-800, now this is in the United States and Canada, 1-800-234-9673, 1-800-234-9673. We have hundreds of the book on hand, and we'll order as we need them. We'll make sure we have plenty in stock. We always deliver things that are out of here within, sometimes within one day. If not, within 2 or 3 days, we get them out of here. And then it depends, of course, on the mail or whatever system that's sent to you. But I can tell you this much. We work nonstop. If necessary, we work after hours because we know when you order something, you don't want, I don't like these ads that say, please allow 6 weeks for shipping. Baloney! No one wants to wait 6 weeks for anything. That's nonsense. We're going to get it out of here within 48 hours, usually. That's the way we do things around here. But please allow the postal people a little time. They're a little slower, you know, than we are here. And it is Christmas time, or shortly thereafter, I should say, holiday time, and they might have a backlog. But I know one thing. We want you to have this book as soon as possible. The Bilderberg Group, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group by Daniel Estlin. Now, again, in the United States and Canada, our toll-free number, 1-800-234-9673. If you're overseas, call us on our regular phone. That is area code 512-263-9780. See, that's why I warned you to get a pencil and some paper all handy, because you have to go sort of fast here. I try to be slow and give you a chance to write it down. Now, our address to send that $29 to is Power of Prophecy, 1708-1708, Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas. That's Texas, 78733 is our zip code. Again, that's 78733. And by the way, get on the internet and you can order it right there on the internet. And I'm telling you, within 24 hours, we take those orders off and they're filled. And we'd be glad to help you out there. Powerofprophecy.com. Powerofprophecy.com. Our sister site is conspiracyworld.com. Conspiracyworld.com. All that's run together, of course. And it's right there on our homepage. You're going to see a little picture of this book. Click on it, order it, and we'll send it to you courtesy of the worldwide internet. Okay, now let's return to our regular program. My guest today is Daniel Estlin, and he's written this groundbreaking book. On the back cover, it says, "From behind the closed doors and past the armed guards comes the true story of the world's power elite and their secret plans for our future." Daniel, welcome back to Power of Prophecy.
Thank you for having me again.
You were just moving into the history of this nefarious, notorious group. So continue on with that, please.
Well, the history of the Bilderbergers, one of the reasons why the Bilderbergers have had so much hard time trying to discredit me over the years is that historically I can demonstrate that what's today's called Bilderberg Group or the Bilderberg Club, 500 years ago, it was called something else. It was called the Venetian Black Nobility. And the times of Venetian Black Nobility and this fight between good and evil defined by the Bilderbergers today goes back to the creation of modern history in the 1439-1440 time frame. That was through the Council of Florence. Again, that was the temporary reunification of Eastern and Western rites of the Christian Church. Now, the Western rites were represented by the future Pope Pio II and also Nicholas of Cusa, and the Eastern rites were represented by Patriarch Isidore. And the result, it set in motion a revolution in political institutions that basically threatened Venice's rule, because in the 13th century, Venice was the absolute ruler of the Mediterranean and of the world. And so with the Council of Florence, which was not only a religious institution, but the concept of man with a capital M, was also a triumph for what later became the Renaissance. The idea behind it was began by Dante, and it was followed up by all of his followers through the 14th and the 15th century. Now, what's important to realize about what it actually stood for, again, when I spoke of modern history, is that the Council of Florence gave us two things. One, the nation state, the law, the constitution, the social welfare. For the first time in history, we the people stopped being slaves and working for the oligarchs, and we began to work for us. And the number two, the scientific and technical progress as the mandate given to the republic. Now, these two ideas represented a crucial argument that their existence as institution in any part of Europe changed absolutely everything in all of Europe. Why? power of mankind over nation, meaning that for the first time in history, we the people started winning square kilometers against nature, and we became our own owners instead of having to work for somebody else. And this is, Tex, what's behind this ferocious conflict over the past 650 years between the forces of representing the classical culture, the forces of good, such as Socrates and Plato, Leonardo da Vinci, Raphael, Leibniz, and Schiller, against the forces of evil represented by the old Venetian ideas of such as Bertrand Russell and company, Aristotle and company, and their modern-day representatives known as the Bilderberger Group. Again, historically, I can demonstrate to anybody willing to listen that what today is called the Bilderberg Club, which is only 50 years young, historically goes back about 600 years to the times of pre-Council of Florence, where we, the people, worked as slaves for the oligarchs, who basically want to do away with us and bring us, dragging us back to the age of where we worked for them, away from the nation states, of course, represented by the greatest nation state on the planet, the United States of America.
Well, I'll tell you, that's really a real mouthful here. I'm trying to get my own words straight here because this is a little different than most people who listen to the conspiracy researchers who focus only on what is right now. And they lose perspective of the history, the big picture, and of the ideologies of these kinds of things. You mentioned that this was centered in Venice. And I understand that. You know, even when you visit Venice and you see the Palace of the Doge and, you know, the incredible political and economic and military power that was Venice. Even, you know, the occult symbol of the phoenix bird came from the Phoenicians and has to do with the rising up out of the ashes of the great phoenix. And there's, I believe, some kind of a magical evil symbolic meaning to that. Maybe you might want to address that. But so I do think you're right. I noticed that in talking about Freemasonry, there is an occult form of the Masonic Lodge in which they have a degree called the Council of Emperors of East and West. Is this somehow connected? This is a black lodge, you know?
Exactly.
Ledbetter, who was a very notorious homosexual Masonic Satanist of over 100 years ago, really touted this Council of Emperors of East and West degree of Freemasonry. So it must have some connection.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead, Tex.
Well, I was just wondering if this might have some connection.
Well, it actually has a lot to do with it. I'm extremely grateful that you brought it up. So few people know about this. It really shows that you're a gentleman and a scholar, that you really, really know your stuff. Now, what you just said, it actually, I've been able to trace it back independently to the House of Wealth. Now, the House of Wealth, W-E-L-F, that's the same house that today is represented by Queen Elizabeth II of England, which, of course, goes back to the Venetian roots and ties into the Bilderbergers. Now, if you allow me 30 seconds, I will very briefly explain this whole relationship to your listeners.
You got it.
Okay. Now, one such family, as I said, is the Welfs, or as they're known as the Guelphs, from which today's Queen Elizabeth, the Queen of England, comes. I found references to the family and to the secret society by cross-referencing it with the names like the Ethicos, the Henrys, the Rudolphs, and the Azoles. The Queen Victoria, for example, comes from the House of East Guelph, and the name East comes from Marquess de East of Venice, also known as the House of Albert Azol. Now, this line is connected to the Welfs and can be easily traced back to the Koningugas, which is, again, the Prince of Wales, and another ardent homosexual. So you have the Queen of England has Venetian roots, but also German roots, again, through the House of Hanover. That's the German aristocracy. And I was able to find all this material in the National Library in Florence, which is the leading research libraries in the world. And what's amazing, Tex, is that so much of this material is at our fingerprints. We just can't ever get to it because we've just been so dumbed down by the mass media entertainment that people don't have the time for important things in life. You know, God is one of them, but also investigating to find out who we are and where we come from, which gives us a very solid base to defend us from these evil creatures known as the Bilderbergers today.
There's so much disinformation, too. I know, you know, a lot of researchers did thousands of hours of work on the JFK assassination, and every time they would come up with a big new discovery that would, you know, lead back to the true perpetrators of the John F. Kennedy assassination, Daniel, suddenly, you know, the powers that be would throw in some nonsense new book or theory that would sound so preposterous. And of course, in that way, they could continue to ridicule those who were researching conspiracies. Now, I want to put you on the griddle, on the hot seat here a little bit, because we're in the midst of a big presidential campaign, as you know. And you mentioned earlier about some of the presidential candidates in America, or potentials, are often invited to the Bilderberg groups, almost as if you're suggesting they're like getting an audition or a tryout by the powerful Bilderbergers. Tell us a little bit about what you know about how they have been involved in the selection of United States presidents.
Well, first of all, I was the first person in the world in 2004 to say that John Kerry will be on the ticket as the vice presidential candidate. That's because our sources, who are members of the Bilderberger Inner Circle, we have people actually on the inside who pass us information almost in real time, live, which is, again, why we know so much about the Bilderberger plans. When John Edwards made the announcement, made his presentation to, did I say John Kerry?
Yeah, I think you meant Kerry president, but he chose Edwards as vice president.
I meant to say John Edwards.
Yeah, I know. Well,
meant to say John Edwards.
It's understandable.
When
John
Edwards made his 5-minute speech to the Bilderbergers at the 2004 conference in Italy about the unions, the entire room erupted in applause, something which is very unlike the Bilderbergers. They don't usually do this. 2 minutes later, Henry Kissinger was on the phone calling John Kerry, and now I got it right, and he basically told John, he said, John, I think we just found your vice presidential candidate. Mm. Now, I reported it the same day, and lo and behold, shortly later, the New York Times was actually admitting to it in one of their articles, and I quote them in my book, saying that, is it possible that Edwards might have been selected at the Bilderberger conference? Again, Hillary Clinton, she's a member of the Bilderberger elite as well, so she's been given the okay, the stamp of approval. Again, unless you belong to one of these secret organizations, you can never, ever hope to get anywhere. Just look at Ron Paul. He's not going very fast, although, again, if he is going to go anywhere, it's because the people are leading this fight, and I think it's the people that can win this against the wishes of the world elite.
Well, it's going to be a big battle, and there are many of us. I'm a Ron Paul supporter because I know the gentleman is an honest man of integrity, but he's really going to have a hard go because of the media control. How about the media? How much is the control by the Bilderberg group of the media?
Well, again, if you look at the list of the media Bilderberger invitees from the mainstream press, you're looking at the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, ABC, NBC, CBS, the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Economist, all of the key media groups from the United States, Canada, and Europe is represented or are represented at the Bilderberg conferences, which is, again, we never hear about the Bilderbergers because nobody wants to talk about them. How is it possible, Tex, when something as non-important as the World Davos Economic Forum, which takes place at the end of January, again, it's not nearly as important as Bilderberger, is covered in every media news outlet in the world, getting thousands and thousands of hours of coverage, front page coverage in the newspapers, or the broadcasters begin their nightly news segments with the World Economic Forum. And then you have the Bilderbergers, where the people who attend own 90% of the planet's riches and wealth, and there's not one line written about them in any one of the media, and then they call us conspiracy theorists.
Now that's an interesting thing. The pot calling the kettle black, we say in America. Here in the state of Texas, we have a state law that says that if any political group, that means a state legislative committee or any kind of commission, even at the city level, you know, city councils, if they meet secretly or privately, that is a criminal act. And there have been some politicians who have been prosecuted stripped of their offices and such because they met secretly. Now, obviously, we are supposed to be democracies, have freedoms, and open societies, so to speak, even in Europe, in the United States. But these people meet, and they totally defy the democratic principles then.
Well, I think that's just important to understand, and I firmly believe that, you know, the idea of democracy has been imposed on us by these leading Bilderberger representatives. I don't believe in democracy. As far as I'm concerned, democracy doesn't exist because the people we vote for every 4 years are the people who the Bilderbergers allow us to vote for, which is why Ron Paul's of this world and others who want to defend the United States Constitution, Canada, or other independent nation states, they don't stand a snowball's chance in hell because they will be wiped out and destroyed by the mainstream press.
Wow.
And unfortunately, you know what people actually believe. Again, the biggest hypnotist in the world is this oblong box everyone has in the corner of the living room called the television set. And again, people have been persuaded that what they can see with their eyes is what's there to see. And they will laugh in your and in my face when we tell them about the secret societies such as the Bilderbergers, you know, the Venetian Black Nobility, the Council of Florence and such. They will laugh in our face because they do not see and can't possibly fathom that there is a bigger picture beyond this oblong box. And again, if people can wake up one day from their stupor, they may just realize that we're in a fight for the death and to the death, and unless we win, we have a very bleak future facing us.
I fully agree with you. And, you know, as far as the United States is concerned, I'm a former professor of political science and American government. I was shocked to discover on my own, because the textbooks really don't tell you about it in America, that even our Bill of Rights, there's a reason why it was the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, and that's because the aristocracy, and I'm talking about the George Washingtons, Thomas Jeffersons, and others, did not intend to give the American people the freedoms that we have. When they set up the centralized national government under our Constitution, but a small group of dissidents in the United States at that time insisted on a Bill of Rights, and they had to guarantee we would get 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Constitution and their central government would never have been approved. And so it was, thank God, a small minority of rabble-rousing conspiracy theorists back then who gave America the Bill of Rights and even some of the provisions in the Constitution. Now, that has been our salvation. Of course, now we have judges that want to, totally reinterpret the Constitution. We have presidents who don't worry about a declaration of war, who throw us into bloody conflicts around the globe. I'm sort of pontificating, but my point, Daniel, is that there is perhaps a small chance. I've noticed, for example, that, let me just state it right now, there is a mutiny going on in the bowels of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Pentagon and among the military brass, not at the top, but in the mid-levels. There are patriotic Americans who have told Bush, go to blazes, and have told the neocon Jews that run America, go jump in the lake. And they are right now, at least, winning. And there's been a war going on, a secret war in America. I wonder if Ron Paul is a symbol of that among the people as a whole. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win the election or anything. I think you're right. They're going to steer us and smear him and lie. And if necessary, they will rig the voting machines. But Daniel, even your book, the interest in your book in America tells me there is a small minority that are waking up. Do you see that in Europe as well?
Dex, my book, absolutely. My book has been published in 49 countries. It has been translated into 29 languages.
That's amazing.
The book you're holding in your hands has sold over 2 million copies worldwide. And that's keeping in mind that in some countries, such as Denmark, the corporations that bought initially the rights to publish my book, they basically bought the rights not to bring it out. In Portugal, my book was published. In Portugal, my book was published. It sold 3 editions in a month. And then some of the Bilderbergers put so much pressure on the publishing company that they had to remove the book from circulation. In the United States, again, a country supposedly is the epicenter of capitalism, anybody would really jump on the opportunity to publish an international bestseller and make a whole lot of money. Well, the people who are publishing my book in the United States called Trine Day, and it's not even a small publishing company, it's a micro publisher, because I think they only publish about 10 books a year, which only goes to show you that, again, it's the people leading this fight against the wishes of the New World Order, One World Government, the men behind the curtain. And the people who are listening to the show, don't just sit there, do something. Let others know that unless we defend what's ours, they will take it away from us, because America is dead. The United States is dead. Canada, my country, is dead. Spain is dead. You don't have in the United States a government that works for the people. The judicial system, long time ago, stopped working in our interest. Congress has been destroyed and corrupted. Who is there to protect our interests, our well-being, our welfare? Who is going to be there to do what the founding fathers of the Republic initially sought for the people? There's no one out there but ourselves, and we better realize it, that the enemy, again, Tex, the enemy is not the Al-Qaeda or Saddam Hussein or Bin Laden or this traveling circus known as the mullahs of Iran. We, the people of the world, are the enemy, and the Bilderbergers will not stop until they destroy every last remnant of freedom and civility and humanity, and obviously at our expense.
Daniel Estlin, I believe everything you have said, I couldn't have stated it any better, and it's that important. And I believe the audience of Power of Prophecy are people who know the truth. They love the truth. And I want to thank you for being on this program today. You've really brought something amazing to this program. You know, this is really not a conspiracy show, not a conspiracy movement. This is part of the truth movement. It's a global movement. It may be small now, but it's like the snowball going down the hill. And Daniel Estlin, you're pushing that snowball, and it is growing. Thank you so much for being our guest today on Power of Prophecy.
Can I just, you know, end it with one phrase?
All right.
You know, Tex, we will win this war, I'm convinced, but only when the power of love overcomes the love of power. Only then will the world know the true meaning of peace.
Daniel, thank you so much for that. John said in the Bible, God is love. So what better example can we emulate? This is Tex Mars. The name of the book is The True Story of the Bilderberger Group. It's available here from the ministry and on powerofprophecy.com. I hope to have Daniel Estlin again very soon on this program. And dear friends, I want to thank you for listening, and I pray you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.